Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I'm Sandy Fowler. I'm here with my co-host, Judy Davis, and today we are talking about sex. So I've been thinking about this one, Judy, and it's interesting to me because my girls are college age now, but when they were little, I didn't have to think about having the big conversations because they asked questions that opened doors to any kind of important conversation, you know, from the whole, why is the sky blue, to why won't the dog play with me, to, you know, what are these little pads or wrapped things underneath the bathroom counter, and what do you use them for, Mom? But, you know, all those questions would just give you opportunities to casually talk about important subjects. But as they get older, I think that we lose those opportunities because they don't necessarily ask us those questions. You know, maybe they're asking their friends, maybe they're just not thinking of them, maybe they're embarrassed to ask us, maybe they're worried about our response. I don't know, but I just think that, you know, those are important conversations, and especially about sex and love and relationships, and the idea that they stop before puberty really bothers me. So I'm thinking, you know, as parents, we need to figure out how to open that door to talking about sex.
I couldn't agree more, Sandy. It's easy to talk about the birds and the bees in those early years and questions of where babies come from. Those were simple because you could take whatever age they were at and give them that information you knew that was age appropriate and slowly build upon their knowledge as they grow. But the game totally changes as they become teens and then get into sex lives as 20-somethings and in the college years. And sometimes they want the details, and other times they don't want to talk about it at all. You know, who knows which type of kid you have, which is why I am so thrilled to have our expert with us, Kath Hackinson, today. Because Kath, she is a mother, sex educator, and founder of Sex Ed Rescue. And I found her online and was so blown away by the topics you were covering because no one's talking about it, Kath, so I totally appreciate it. And you bring to the table 20 plus years of clinical knowledge in addition to like this down-to-earth approach and passion for helping families navigate these tough, tough topics. And your company, I know, has a goal of like arming us with the tools and advice and tips to take care of the stuff that Sandy and I kind of are just bringing up. And I just want to thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks.
So, Kath, you know, we've said this, you know, okay, when the kids were little, we talked more about those kinds of things. And maybe we get uncomfortable as they get older and we're not sure how to bring up these topics. So if as parents we don't have those conversations about sex and we just let that go and ignore it, what happens to our kids?
Well, I often say that if you let your kids grow up just watching MTV, the trap, listening to commercial radio, that sort of stuff, and you don't talk to them about your own feelings and beliefs about stuff, they're basically left out there to sort of navigate and work out what's okay and what's not okay in regards to sexual attitudes and behaviours by themselves. Because I think back to, I guess, our own growing up, my parents spoke to me about nothing. So I worked out my own beliefs about sex based on what was around me. And this is the thing, today kids are living in such a sexualized world with so many messages that by not talking, we're really throwing them out there and quite vulnerable. And they're having to work, pick and choose and work out what's okay. So if it's, yeah, they end up following or doing things that you may not be comfortable with or may not fit in with your values as well. So I guess, yeah, that's why we need to do that talking.
Do you find that parents are talking to their kids about this kind of stuff or not really?
Not when you get to the teenage years. It gets really tricky. Puberty's really easy because, you know, you talk about periods and breasts and pubic hair. You might talk about sexual feelings. Most parents don't go there. Might talk about masturbation because you might suddenly be going through a lot more liquid soap in the shower or doing the washing and stuff. But then they get to that sexual age, and there's all this great American research that says that teens notice that their parents suddenly stop talking about consent, or they suddenly stop talking about when is it okay for me to have sex, or how do I know if they're the right one. So there is that real drop off of parents being comfortable talking about the really tricky stuff, which is the actual kids doing sex.
Exactly. Well, it's interesting because so many of the parents that I talk to, it's almost as if they're afraid to talk about sex because they don't want to put that idea in their kid's head that if they talk about it, then all of a sudden the kids are going to experiment. And what I would love for you to talk a little bit about is what we need to know about talking to them about sex. It's like, as a parent, I'm sitting here listening and I'm going, well, how do I know when to talk to them or what to say?
Every kid is different. Like, I live in the inner city, so my kids know about prostitution, homelessness, drug abuse. They know about sex toys because there's a sex toy shop a block away. So every kid is different. So my kids know about this stuff, and they're not even teenagers yet, because they're exposed to it. So it depends on the environment that you're in. Like, if you've got, like in Australia at the moment, we've got a very strong anti-transgender, anti-sexual diversity movement happening. So I'm having to have conversations with my kids about gender and stuff because there's such an anti-movement out there in the local media. So this is the thing. I think as a parent, there's not really a checklist of things that we need to talk about. And I guess this is the thing that makes it hard as a parent, because it's like, here I am saying there's no checklist, which means it's like, well, what the hell do I talk to my kids about? And this is the thing, and I think this is the problem with sex education nowadays, is that we focus more on ticking a list of topics to talk about rather than realizing it's not what we say, it's about the fact of letting our kids know that we're here to talk about. So if I've never talked to my kids about any of this stuff before, and they're now 13 and 14, and I think I need to start talking, I can come in and say, hey, look, you know, we haven't talked about sex before because, you know, I just find it such an embarrassing topic. My own parents never talked to me. But I now know as a teenager that you're getting so many messages out there about sex, and your friends might be doing stuff, and we really need to start talking. But look, how about I start trying to make an effort to talk more, and you might then start hearing something on the radio, or you might go out and buy a book and say, look, here's a book, some really good information, so that you don't have to go and turn to the internet to get information. Because if you're not giving kids information, where else are they going to turn? Look, if the internet had been around when I was a teenager, I would have been watching pornography because we had to go to the encyclopedia. But hey, if you could go to porn and it shows you what to do, of course kids are turning to that sort of stuff. So I think as parents, we need to be able to say, hey, I'm here to talk about stuff. And just like you might be driving in the car and there might be a song about, you know, having sex with lots of girls on the weekend, and you might turn around to your teenager and say, hey, you think about that, you know, do you think that's okay behavior? Or there might be a story about rape at a university of a girl who drank too much and 10 guys stand around and video themselves having sex. So you might have a conversation about, well, what would you do if you were at a party and your friend walked off into a room with 10 guys? That's so having conversations about stuff that you hear. And they say that, and I totally agree with this, that your kids need you more, I think, in those teenage years, because the conversations are so much trickier.
Yeah.
So it's more, I think as teens, it's more about the fact of letting them know that you're there and having those conversations, but also being aware that they might be rolling their eyes and acting as if they're not listening, but they might be, but it's the fact that you're letting them know that you're there and it's okay to talk about stuff. That's what's important.
What's interesting to me is, as much as we complain about the way media sexualizes things and the way that they handle it, this is actually a place where it can be helpful. I know we started a lot of across the board difficult conversations, you know, sex, drugs, coworker relationships, just, I mean, all kinds of things, because you watch a movie or you watch a TV show and something happens. My daughter was in high school when Grey's Anatomy got popular, and we hadn't watched it, but suddenly the group of girls she was hanging out with, you know, they got together, they watched it. She came home, I'm like, what is this? Sat down and I went, okay, I can say you can't watch this at home, but she'll watch it with them. Or instead, I sat down and watched it with her and just started those conversations.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to add to that and ask a question, because it brings up the point of, you're using these opportunities to weave in the conversation, to have it be a normalcy, a part, you know, sex is part of our lives, and a healthy relationship with sex is really important to the happiness of us as we grow older. And what happens if our kids bring up something or are exposed to something that we honestly don't have a clue about or have very strong beliefs about? How would you tell us to kind of approach those subjects?
It's going to happen all the time, because sexual terminology changes. Like twerking, I still don't even know what it is myself. And you know what? As a sex educator and a sexologist, I don't even bother now keeping up to date with a lot of the jargon and the terminology, because it's the same old stuff that was happening when we were younger. They just give it a different name and stuff. But there are new issues coming up, like pornography. Our parents didn't talk to us, therefore this topics that we don't naturally think of talking about. So I think as a parent, if it's stuff that your kids are bringing up and you don't know yourself, it's about that being honest as well, because already as parents, how many times do your kids say something to you and you go, I don't know. So it's about, I guess, being honest and owning up and saying, look, I really don't know, but how about we talk about this later on, and then having those resources to be able to go and find that information. But sometimes I think you don't actually need to know a lot about the topic as well, because you can say, throw back to them, well, what do you think? And then you'll often find out what exactly it is that they're talking about and stuff as well. But it is a tricky one, I think, as parents, because we think that, you know, the times have changed. They have and they haven't. Yeah, a lot of the jargon and the terminology does, but what kids are actually getting up to is really not that much different to what we were getting up to.
Interesting.
So, you know, we were talking about having these conversations, taking opportunities, some of the things, you know, ways to open that. Besides not talking to our children at all, what are the other mistakes you see parents making?
Oh, probably talking too much. I was just reading something last night which had some beautiful tips on how to talk to teenagers, and it was so simple. It was fantastic. And it was talking about the things about the, and it's so true with the sex stuff. And I know myself, as soon as I come in talking to my kids too much, it's like the instant back off. So I think making sure that we don't talk much and that we actually listen and ask what they think as well. Sometimes talking in a more indirect way can be helpful as well. So it might be about, well, what do you think your friends would do, or what are your friends up to in regards to this topic? So making it a little bit less personal as well. So yeah, like everything with parenting, we have to change our strategies as our kids get older, mm-hmm. and what used to work in regards to talking might not work now or later on as well.
Mm-hmm. So how does that play in when values come into play? When our kids are getting to be, you know, 18, 19, they could have completely different values when it comes to sex and relationships than we do. How do you handle that?
Well, a lot of parents will say that my child has completely different values. And it's like, well, hello, of course, you haven't shared your values. You haven't talked to your daughter about what your beliefs are about contraception. And you haven't talked to your son about respectful behavior towards women and what your values are. So I think if you do not talk about values at all, kids are just going to pick and choose from what they're seeing around them, which may not always be good. So I think that, yeah, if you want your children to have similar values, you do need to share them, because as you know yourself, and look, like, I come from a family of seven children. We were all brought up the same way, but oh my God, our values are so different. And this is the thing. So I think as parents, in regards to sexual values, we definitely do need to share them, especially when you're talking about abstinence. Now in Australia, we're not big into abstinence. Isn't even in our vocabulary, unless you're going to a Catholic church, and then they probably call it something else. Right. But this is a thing from my experience of working with a lot of American parents, is that they don't actually have a proper conversation with their children about abstinence. And abstinence, you know, if that's what you believe in, that's fine. But if you need to be actually be able to talk to your child about what that actually means, because withholding information isn't going to equal abstinence. So this is that thing as well, as parents as well. If you do want your kids to abstain from sex, you need to actually share that and actually talk about the why and have meaningful conversations and talk about why you believe in it, and also talk about the struggles you might have yourself as well. And oh, storytelling is fantastic, because, you know, we all do have experiences ourselves, or we have experiences that our friends went through as well. So sharing those stories as well and showing that you actually do have those life experiences as well is just so important.
Mm-hmm.
And what about, because this kind of goes there, I think when people think about having conversations about sex, they, in, like you said, more of that puberty place of the mechanics and the physiology of it. Is that one of the mistakes that we make too? Not addressing the emotional aspect of this?
Yeah, I'm a nurse and I automatically go to the nuts and bolts of all the plumbing approach of sex ed. And it's interesting as a parent, because you do have to talk about the relationship stuff. You do have to talk about the feelings and the fact that, you know, what is it like? What's love? How do you know when they're the right one? They're really tricky conversations, because we as adults struggle with it ourselves, because, you know, how many of us had in-depth, really deep and meaningful relationships with our own parents, which is why, as we haven't even got to that yet, but it's teenagers automatically go through that stage of not wanting to go to the parent for information as well. Because there's no way that I expect my son to come to me for lessons on how to put on a condom. It's just not appropriate. And if he did, I'd be a little bit worried about his development, because there's some stuff that's just not appropriate to talk to parents about. And that's where you're getting more into the technique stuff, like how do I put a condom on, which hole do I stick it in, that sort of stuff when I'm doing it. That sort of stuff, it's just not age and developmentally appropriate for kids to come to parents about that sort of stuff. So I think we need to remember as parents is that we're not actually teaching kids how to do it, but we're teaching them to be able to do it in a way that's meaningful, and hopefully they can have a happy, fulfilling relationship where they're not going to get their fingers burnt or that. And yeah, because at the end of the day, that's what we want our kids to grow up and meet someone and hopefully fall in love and have a lovely, meaningful relationship and maybe start the next generation if that's what they want to do.
Right. And I appreciate you giving me that, almost that line in the sand as a parent, to know, you know, I need to be open and honest about that whole emotional side of things. But really and truly, I don't have to go to that uncomfortable place of how to actually do this act or this act or this act. Mm. That took a lot of pressure off of me, because it's really easy to go, okay, in this day and age, I need to be completely transparent and I need to do this because that's the healthy thing for my kid, and I need to be that mentor. I need to do this. And I don't need to be their friend in certain places. Am I getting what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. It's almost as a parent, you're not the instructor, you're the moral compass, you're the one who's helping them navigate that sexual world. And what's really interesting is that, like, Sandy, I think you mentioned before about the fact that it's such a sexualized world out there and there's so many messages that are negative. It actually makes our job as a parent so much easier. I actually think it's easier for us to do sex education now than it was for our parents, because every day, I hopped in the car the other day to take my son to soccer, I turned the radio on and straight away, first breath was, and this week's sex tip is, and I just switched over and turned the radio off because it was like I was frazzled.
Whoa.
I just don't want to go there. But there's so many opportunities slapping you in the face saying, talk to your kids about this, talk to your kids about that. Mm-hmm. And especially as teenagers, you know, turning on commercial radio. And I know myself as my daughter's suddenly hit high school, and I'm now having to sit and watch all these refulging programs on Netflix and on TV that I really don't really want to watch. But it's giving us so many opportunities to talk about stuff. So this is the thing as a parent, we've got to start being a little bit more hands-on as our kids get older as well, because they're just giving you opportunities to keep on talking.
So when I'm curious, Kath, is, you know, you work with parents and with kids. Mm. What is the most common question you get from the kids? You know, what's the thing that they seem to have maybe a big misconception about, or they really want to know about?
Oh, look, it's hard to know. I don't know if I can answer that because it depends on the, like, I get family. I work with people who are talking from when kids are really little. A lot of people don't think of talking until puberty because that's when our parents talked. So that's the automatic default. And then as they become teenagers, I think, and this is backed up by the research as well, that what teens are looking for aren't the actual facts, but more the guidance in regards to love and relationships, more about wanting that information about how do I know when it's right? What do I do with all my friends are doing it, but I don't want to. So they're looking more for that moral value, I guess, guidance as well.
Right.
Which is actually, like Judy said, that to me is, it's that relief, because I can see more how to talk about the relationships. And I realized even what I said earlier, that's what I was talking to my girls about when we run into something on TV is, well, you know, what we think about their choices and the places these people choose and the timing and the people and in and out of a marriage and relationships and those things, which is the love, the relationships that like you said, the moral compass, the values place, which is the piece that parents are worried about transferring to their kids. So it's a little lightening of the load to know that that's what they want and that's all we need to give. Mm-hmm.
Now, I was just thinking, though, of what actually has changed. There are some topics that I think we do need to talk about more now, though, as parents, and definitely about relationships, because there's a lot of research that says that, you know, oral sex is the new goodnight kiss. And there's a lot of research that says, you know, teens are out there doing it. But this is the thing, is that teens need to know that not all teens are out there doing it. It's just that the research, there's a lot of scaremongering, but pornography is definitely a conversation that we need to have with our kids nowadays. Sexting, you know, you can't just turn around to your teen and say, don't send pictures of yourself naked, because teens sext for reasons that we often don't understand. And it's just part of the communication of teenagers now. And consent is so topical. Just, you know, getting on Facebook, there's so many articles around there about consent. But consent is definitely a topic that as parents that we do need to talk more about with our kids, because it's it's, I know coming from a sex therapy background and working in an STI setting, is that even 10, 20 years ago and now, adults struggle to say no to sexual stuff when they're actually in that situation. So these are conversations that I think, I'm not sure who's going to step up and actually have these conversations. This is, I probably shouldn't be talking about this. I was always taught, never talk about something when you're trying to still process it yourself. And I have this struggle where I have my sex educator, sexologist, clinical hat on, and then I have my parent hat, and I think of my kids as they're going up, and I know that they're not going to get enough conversations about consent and how to say no properly in the current system that we have of education. So I know that I'm going to have to step up as a parent and have those conversations, but I have to work out myself, how am I going to have these conversations with my kid with my parent hat on, not as a clinician, but as a parent? And this is something I'm trying to work out myself about the best way for parents to be able to support their kids. Luckily, there are some good books coming out, and this is why I just love books, because you don't need to be an expert on a topic. I've just bought two books recently that talk about consent for teens, and one of them is sexual consent. And it gives all these beautiful situations of sexual situations that teens might get into and talks it through. And, you know, throwing a book like that to your teenager and saying, hey, have a read of this, and then talking about it, is a great way to have a conversation. So it's getting a little bit easier, but there are, definitely some topics that we need to talk about with parents.
Exactly.
And with our kids as parents.
And we could, you know, you said you're kind of working it out, but you already told us some really interesting things to do, which is that, you know, what would you said earlier, ask them, what would you do in a situation like that? What do you know, have you heard of someone else being in that situation? Maybe, well, what did they do? What would you do differently? And then with having that book, you know, because that's the kind of thing where I would get it and go, hey, you know, here they read it, but I would also read it and go, you know, I was reading this and I don't even know how you get in this situation, or wow, that took a lot of courage to do that, mm-hmm. and just leave it open-ended to let them pop in. So you gave us two great ways to do that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we could talk literally for 10 hours on this subject, and I feel like we just scratched the surface. So mm-hmm. I can definitely see a time that we're going to have you back. But I'm going to be oftentimes my role is the keeper of the box. So I am going to have Sandy just give us a quick wrap up, and then we're going to have you tell us how they can get more from you, Kath. So Sandy, kind of give us a whole thing about today.
All right. Well, to keep it super simple, the biggest mistake parents make in talking to their kids about sex is not talking to their kids about sex. Also, parents have the misconception that this involves talking about the mechanics, when what kids are actually asking for and what they need from us is actually the mentoring and the guidance on love and relationships and the values side of things. Some of the things that we can do, and a couple other mistakes that we make, are not talking about experiences and sharing stories and talking too much rather than listening. You know, Kath gave us, like I just said, those great examples of asking the kids things. But there are also a few topics that we need to make sure that we are touching on as parents. One is pornography, another is sexting, and the third is consent. So spend time with our kids, listen to them, and just use the opportunities that are around us to open doors for conversations.
Does that sound right, Kath?
Yep. Summed up beautifully. I'm impressed.
So if somebody is out there listening going, give me more, can you tell us a little bit about where they can find you and what they can get from you?
Yeah. So my website is sexedrescue.com. Most of my content, though, does target more towards the younger years and tweens. As a parent, my whole the whole website's very much tempered by my parenting hat. Nice. So I will have more and more content. I do keep throwing stuff on there for teens and tweens, mainly because of parental demand. I will have more content on there for teens. It's just that I'm a bit reluctant to write too much until my kids have actually lived it as well.
Quick thing too, I just want to say, anyone who's in our Mighty Parenting Facebook group, or if you're not, come join us. And I'm sure that if under the posting for the podcast here, pop in your questions and we'll get with Kath and get answers to your questions and just put them right in there.
Absolutely. Definitely. Well, thanks so much for joining us, Kath. And now it is time to dig into Real Talk, where we're going to be discussing the truth about family dinners right after this quick message.
Parenting is the toughest job you'll ever love. It's a common phrase because it's so true. And as the teen years roll around and you start seeing changes in your child and you may start wondering, what's going on? Are they okay? Is this normal? And again, as they move out of the house, go out on their own, go off to college, you see more changes. And sometimes the changes are perfectly normal. And sometimes they're an indication that your child's in over their head, that there are things going on that they can't handle. And the parents' worry and their concern is, how do I know the difference? Well, now there's a book that can tell you. It's Warning Signs, and it is a parenting guide to help you understand about those changes and to help you figure out if your child could be at risk for depression, addiction, or suicide. The book will take you by the hand, walk you through that understanding, give you the confidence to be able to take the next step, to have a conversation or whatever it is that you need to do, and to give you some idea on some of the paths that you can follow. You can go to dasium.net to the store in the shop there and get your own copy.
Welcome back. It is time for Real Talk after such a fun interview today. And today I get to pick the topic. One thing I wanted to do was bring in to today's discussion something that's going on over in our Facebook group. So if you're not part of that, we'd love you to join us at the Mighty Parenting Facebook group. But over there, we posted a question to our parents. What is the thing that you regret or miss that isn't still happening as our teens get older? And we had so many awesome different ideas of what they miss, from cuddling to just having giggles and those kind of things. But the thing that struck me, and it was something that you posted, Sandy, and it was the regret of letting go of family dinner. And it really resonated with a lot of our parents. And it was surprising to me. And I just started thinking about it and went, we have such busy lives, everyone's going in 100 different directions, that is the thing that people let go of very quickly. So I want you to kind of share with me why you said that was the thing you missed most.
Well, it's not that I missed it the most. We had a couple of different posts. One was the things you missed and one was regrets. We've talked about things that you're glad you did, just to share ideas. But my regret of letting go of family dinner is because in not having it anymore, I've seen firsthand the difference that it makes in our family. And that's kind of the feedback I got from other parents, is you lose so much connection by not just sitting down and having a meal together. Having that time each day or whatever, that you touch base, that you find out what's going on in each other's lives, or you talk about even if it's just talking about logistics and things, but you know, how was your day? Is it exciting? Not necessarily, but it's a connecting point. And losing that is a big deal. And then also, I think it sends the message to our kids on, you know, values and what's important. Mm-hmm. By letting that go, I think we're devaluing our family relationships. And we're saying other things are more important than the family.
Interesting, because I hadn't thought of it that way. I just went, how in the world you know, I think back to the high school years when we have swim team and soccer team and they're going one way, dad's coming home from work late and I'm running around in my business and doing all that kind of stuff. And it's like, as long as they have food in their bellies, I'm good.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it through to the effect of the message that that was sending, that the activities or work is more important and definitely not equally as important as sitting down together and having a meal.
And that's the thing, is I'm not saying that people shouldn't have activities or that I wished I told my kids they couldn't do things. I certainly couldn't make my husband be here. He works in the afternoon and evening. So, I mean, there was nothing I could do about that. He goes to work at like 2 or 2:30. But we could have said, we're doing family breakfast, or we do Sunday breakfast, or we do Sunday dinner. There needs to be a time or a way. And for your family, it might not be family dinner. It's it's just, I don't want to say a tradition, because to me that feels like a big, huge thing.
Right.
It's more like a habit and a routine that connects your family.
It's interesting because I think back to, I'm the oldest of five kids and there was always 100 kids at my home growing up. And while we didn't do family dinners, what we did do was Friday game night. Mm-hmm. And it was something that we all had to be. And I think it did the same thing. It made the opportunity for us to do something together that wasn't just check off a box, or that wasn't a chore or something that felt heavy. It was just a time to create memories. And I think that that's a value. Back in the day, everybody went to grandma's house for Sunday dinner. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the family memories and smells and things are things I cherish from back then. So I think the value, I love that you're getting us back to that place.
Yeah. So, well, and like I said, it was a regret and I wanted to share it with other parents because, you know, with them in college, as they come home on breaks and things, it became really obvious to me when they're coming home under different circumstances that they don't have that value around sitting down to eat together. Mm-hmm. And it's actually, what's really interesting is for years we had family dinner together and we even homeschooled for a few years. So we had family breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. Just letting it go for those couple 2 to 3 years in high school really had a negative impact on our family. And so now I'm starting to kind of casually, quietly, I didn't make a big stink about it, but now I'm just going, instead of, like you said, my theory was I made food and I didn't even have to put it on the table because everyone had schedules. I made food and put it in the fridge. I would make dinner at breakfast time and stick it in the fridge and everyone would warm it up when they needed it. We're not doing that. I'll go, hey, you know, whoever's here, if it's me and one other person, let's sit down and eat together.
Yeah, exactly. And it's that little, yeah, play on words, simple strategy, yeah, that we're sharing that really can open up. A bunch of our shows have talked about the importance of opening up the line of communication. So bringing it full circle, this gives us a place to do just that, which is why I love it.
Yeah. And, you know, we titled this The Truth About Family Dinners. And that's, to me, that was because it's not that you have to have a family dinner and it's not that you're a bad person if you don't do it. And I think that sometimes you don't do it just because it feels like so much pressure, just like the real talk that we did about quality time with your team, you know, that pressure of what is it really? It doesn't have to be a family dinner. It's more of where do we have an opportunity to have family connection? It's worth protecting. It's worth, if you as you know, mom or as dad don't have the energy to make it happen, because sometimes that's exhausting, give out jobs. You know, it is your job to make dinner this Saturday, or it is your job to do the grocery shopping. You know, split up these tasks or use the opportunity to do them together. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, you know what? On these days or every day, we're all meeting in the kitchen for 30 minutes and helping to make dinner, or two people are going to make dinner and three people are going to clean up. But just find a way to connect the family.
I love it. And I just want to say thank you to everyone for joining us for this episode. And if this is your first time, welcome. Here at Mighty Parenting, we really are more than just a podcast. We are a community that supports one another in helping each other raise our teens and parent our young adults in a way that's not only fun, but hits on those topics that we need. And you can become a Mighty Parent over in the Facebook group. I know we talked about that, but also over on the mightyparenting.com website. Right over there, you can put in your email address and you will get a little gift from us, as well as some information on creating healthy coping strategies and all kinds of things that you need. So until next time, this is Judy Davis and my wonderful partner, Sandy Fowler, encouraging you to be a mighty parent.